LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Hit the music. Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, JD of HoodooHouseDetroit.com in Detroit, Michigan, bringing us today's topic, the Doctrine of Signatures. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, JD. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome once again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places here on the LMC Radio Network. You know what today is, Reverend James?
No, what?
It's Monday. Do you know what Monday means?
Oh.
Other than Mystics and Mages?
Hoodoo Psychics.
That's right. For everybody listening, make sure you take that Magic Mondays post, go to Hoodoo Psychics on Facebook, and drop a comment on their Magic Mondays post to win your free 15-minute reading with your favorite Hoodoo Psychic. Miss Kat is on Hoodoo Psychics. Myself, Reverend James, our guest today, JD. We're all there, and we are happy to talk to you, so definitely make sure you get in on that giveaway. They do it every week. Follow the page, and hopefully we'll see you there. All right, so a lot of great things been going on this week. How are things with you, Reverend James?
Things are going well. I guess I could let everybody know that I've been doing a lot of study in the Buddhist tradition, and I've decided to create a Facebook group for people that would like to, you know, join different practice groups and study groups. You can look it up on Facebook at VBS Virtual Buddhist Study. And I'm hoping to maybe bring together Buddhist practitioners and help you know, everybody practice together, learn more things, and, you know, share out news of different things going on in the Buddhist tradition.
No, and that is really cool. I myself have joined, have sent out a few invites, but for anybody interested, and whether you're a practitioner or just wanting to learn, definitely take some time. I did drop the comment into the chat, the VBS, Virtual Buddhist Study Group on Facebook. You know, we've done a lot of updates this week, folkconjure.com and Folk Faith Ministries up and growing, as you would. Stuff really going on, you know, really, you know, trying to provide the best opportunities for folks to learn, to grow, and to support them in their spiritual journeys. All that being said, I am thrilled tonight to be welcoming back our first ever guest on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, all the way from Michigan. Well, I guess that could be relative, huh? Depending on where you're at in the U.S. or the world listening right now. But JD from the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, as well as Hoodoo Psychics and HoodooHouseDetroit.com. Welcome back, JD. It's awesome to have you back.
Thanks, Reverend Art. It's great to be back. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. Can't complain.
Yeah.
So why don't you fill us in? What's been going on in the world of JD since you last joined us?
Since I last joined you, I kind of wrapped up my work year for the year. So I'm kind of on break right now. But I'm still taking classes and working on my PhD. So I have a lot of reading and writing going on behind the scenes. And I finally was able to get out and actually get into my own garden. So kind of similar to what we're going to be talking about today. And now I'm really get a lot of my plants finally growing and really get my yard back in shape. So I spent a couple days last week and yesterday and part of today really getting my hands dirty in the soil and really getting down with the herbs. And I like it. I enjoyed it. So me and my Jack Russells had a fun time in the garden. He helped dig the holes I put in the plants.
I can picture this going on. That's fantastic. So I got to ask, what kind of herbs did you put in?
The other day I put rosemary, basil, oregano, Greek oregano, Italian oregano, some chives. I did a bunch of different peppers, hot peppers, tomatoes. I did some cucumbers, zucchini, things like that.
I think I'm just going to come to your place for dinner in a few months here.
No, I actually have three more raised beds that I haven't even planted anything yet. So I'm debating if I'm to try to, or if I'm just going to go easy this year, I guess I'd say. But we'll see.
It is a lot to maintain. I grew up learning gardening from my great grandmother, and, you know, it was very, very much, and, you know, being young, you know, the young Reverend Art did not really understand and appreciate the instructions being received about when to plant this and when to plant that. Only now do I know that we were planting by the signs and we were planting by by the moon and in different phases and such. And I'm really grateful for having those experiences, and I like to continue that even now. And I'm sure you had a little bit of that going on in your planting as well. Go ahead.
My mom was a very big into gardening, and then my grandparents, they immigrated from Italy. They were big into gardening. So especially with, like tomatoes and stuff. So kind of just something we've always done my whole life. So it doesn't feel like summer if I'm not doing it. it's an important, I guess, tradition. And it also tastes good at the end. You get a good profit out of it. You get all those tomatoes, and they're so much more delicious than, you know, store-bought. Just a completely different
product. Very true. Very true. And before we make everybody hungry today, you know, I also know that, you know, Hoodoo House Detroit been rocking it out. A lot of readings and workings and such going on. Still the stellar mentor, guide, and proctor at the Lucky Mojo Forum. Folks, JD is on it when it comes to the Lucky Mojo Forum. I barely get the notification when something new gets posted before he's already responded to it. So, you know, just hats off, kudos. If you haven't taken the time, folks, to really get out there and check out the Lucky Mojo Forum, I know I was chatting in our chat with Phyllis Margaret Gabor, who is joining us tonight. We were chatting on the forum a little bit earlier today. You know, there's so much information there. So much information there, and so many questions that you wonder and you're curious about, and there's a very good chance that you're going to find those answers there. You know, JD definitely takes the time, and he, like him and Miss Cat put in endless hours curating these different threads and putting them all together for you to use. You know, it's a labor of love that the dividends for everybody that participates on the forum is immense. So I will always tip a hat to you, JD, for what you provide to everyone on the forum. Nobody, I don't think, really realizes just how much time and effort goes into maintaining it.
Yeah, I mean, and you and James as well, Miss Cat and Nagashiva, I mean, really do so much of the work. You know, I just answer questions. You guys do so much of the tech part that makes it even possible. You know, how many times do I get a message from you like, oh, there's a, you know, an spyware or whatever going on. You know, there's a lot that goes into running the forum, and, you know, so there really is a lot of work that people don't even see. I talk with Kat sometimes, and she's editing a page and getting something ready and getting a book ready. I mean, there's always something going on. So, and it's like Phyllis saying that she always finds an answer. And I agree, is there's thousands of questions and answers on the forum on products or on conditions. So you can kind of look up either way. If you're looking for a love condition, then you can go under, you know, the topic on love. Or if you are looking for a specific product, like I want to know what people say about Love Me Oil, then you can go under the oil section and find that and read all about that particular oil. So it's a great resource for really everyone out there. So by all means, everyone, please jump on, ask questions, and read. You'll find that you can spend a couple hours on there and you wouldn't even know you were, you know, down that rabbit hole for a couple hours.
That's very true. And, you know, talking about the forum, it does kind of flow into a bit with our discussion for today, because you get to see a little bit of the nuances in how different practitioners utilize the oils, the herbs, you know, and all of the different accoutrements that makes up the magical practices. And then there's herbmagic.com, which is also another site that's curated by Miss Cat that provides so much more information, getting down into like the nitty gritty of the herbs. I don't know. I'm just really thrilled to be bringing the topic for tonight. JD had approached me saying, hey, let's do something on the doctrine of signatures. You know, a lot of people they've heard of it. They're not sure of it. Not sure exactly what it means, what it's attributed to, don't know the history. And it's really a good launch pad for everybody, whether you are just starting out on your path or really digging in and looking to advance your practice. So I was thrilled putting this all together. And, you know, I'm sure JD is going to walk us through just a phenomenal discussion.
Absolutely. I'm very excited about the topic. I think it's a very interesting topic. It actually transcends cultures. So it'll be a fun discussion tonight.
You know, and we're coming right off of last week's discussion on Herbology 101 with Trevor Pearson. So this is like a perfect time to really follow up on that. Herbs play a huge let's talk about herbs and the use of herbs for a moment. Because herbs play such a huge role in, well, herbs, roots, and other materia as such play such a huge role in, you know, magical practice. We not just for cooking, which, as we all know, here it comes, my plug for Hoodoo Food. Got to check out Hoodoo Food if you want to get some, get down with the nitty gritty of cooking with magical herbs. Fantastic book. And I'm sure there's going to be a link that just magically jumps up into the chat here on where to check that book out. Incenses, herbs dress our candles, herbs protect our homes. There's the whole side of herbs that falls under like herbal medicine and such. And the traditions are just ancient. I mean, from traditional Chinese medicine, that the documentation goes back thousands of years. Ayurveda from India, again, thousands of years. And,
right,
you know, we look at it and it's everybody, you'll see, it's one of my favorite things to say is, you know, you go into a bookstore and go to the little section on herbs and everything, and you'll see all these books and you're like, where do I even start? Because there's so much material out there. But really kind of bringing that into your practice, I think, on all levels is paramount, I think, to really having a successful practice. What do you think, JD?
I agree. What I would say is that what difference from today's conversation from last week's is, though we will kind of cover some of the medical aspect of herbology, but ultimately explaining how the doctrine of signature and how it applies in the metaphysical aspect. But it is so intricate to understanding why a certain herb is used and the history behind it and the traditions behind it, even the you know, the ethnography of it, that it is so in without knowing why, why do it? I usually ask when people list off like 25 herbs they want to put in a mojo bag. First thing I ask them to do is write down each one and tell me why you want it in the bag. Because at some point, you know, you have to understand why and the custom and tradition and how it's been practiced. And as you said, some of these practices go back thousands and thousands of years, as far as back as we can really, as far back as history can really tell us about man and his experience with herbs and minerals and, you know, and how they use those in spiritual practices and as well as medicine. It wasn't really until, you know, after the more modern did we really separate the medical from the magical. Prior to, you know, the 1700s. There was always this balance between the two, even with physicians. And And we see that going all the way back through history. So that's kind of one of the top reasons I'm interested in this topic and wanting to share it, is that kind of shedding light on the tradition and how you can learn from your herbs and roots and thus, like you said, enhance your own practices.
You know, and it's really transcendent. It is. It builds bridges to be able to talk about the herbs from, you know, the different perspectives. I mean, we're talking, I've already mentioned, you know, traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, but there's been evidence from archaeological digs in the Middle East, all over the Middle East, through Israel and Jerusalem, through Egypt. It's still a very strong practice in a lot of mainland Africa. You see it with Aboriginal tribes in Australia. You see it with Native American history here in the U.S. and throughout Canada and such. It's such, kind of like last week how we were talking about with herbology, we're not really able, we wouldn't really be able to get into all of it in one show. The doctrine of signatures portion of it is, it's kind of a key element to launch this, the further discussion down the road here as we progress through, of growing that herbal knowledge for everybody. So really, really a fantastic topic, you know, and I want to give it as much time as we possibly can tonight. So why don't we take this moment now? We're going to pause for our sponsorship announcements. And then we will be back with JD and the Doctrine of Signatures.
That's great.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, the Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays, 5 to 6, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Thursdays, 1 to 2, and Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays, 7 to 8, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern. All of our shows are available in archives at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, where you will see them listed by title and episode and with clickable links. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
You know, I can't help it. I sit here and dance in my chair every time the genie song begins. And huge shout out to Nagashiva for providing that for us and updating it. Going to have to update it again, unfortunately, with the Witch and the Priest and the Witch, the Priestess and the Cauldron relaunching in a couple weeks. Can't wait for that. All right, here we go. I'm going to turn this over to you, JD. Take it away.
And I see Dr. Sweet's question in the comment, and I'm kind of going to answer that as well with a little bit of the background. So like you wrote in the box that Theosorides, who wrote the Materia Medica, which was around 80 CE, and he's considered the father of pharmacology. And that book was used well up into the 1700s, 1800s, and it included over 600 plants, and animals and other traditional medicines. And it basically, it the idea was that plants resemble parts of the body and that they can be used by an herbalist to treat a patient by observing the plant or the symptom. A lot of people believe this is actually from a medieval time period, but it actually goes back further than that. It did become very prominent in the 16, 1700s. Belief from the European physicians is that God put his signature on every plant during its creation, and that tells people how they can actually use the herb or the plant. And while this was happening in, you know, Greece and in Europe, as you mentioned, this is also what was happening in traditional Chinese medicine, the Yellow Emperor, classic from the 3rd century, developed on herbology. And in that, they discuss hot and cold and the elements of the herb and restoring the balance in the body. You also had how a plant grows would play into the role of it as well. This is a staple to Native American herbalism that happened here in, you know, the United States, as you mentioned, in India, and as well as African traditions. Point here was to point out that there is this long history well past the 1500s of the doctrine of signature in both medical and magical traditions.
I mean, you know, we do have to say too, because while, you know, it really does bring in, and Reverend James kind of chimed in a little bit too in the chat, it truly is a world sort of phenomenon. But during that Renaissance period, you know, when you're thinking like late 1400s, 1500s, 1600s, like that period in time, you know, a lot of the centers of commerce and industry and all of that were focused on Europe, you know, so it makes sense that the term the doctrine of signatures came about during this time. It was spurred on by this focus in the European continent. But it did have its origins throughout the world. It was just popularized, I guess you can say. It was the pop culture of the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And what will, you know, it's kind of funny because I know you, a couple weeks ago you had Ms. Kat on and she was talking about like the astrology aspect of that. And, you know, that also at the same time played a big role in the doctrine of signatures too, as well as the medical practices of like doctors. For example, one of the books I have with me I brought was Nicholas Culpepper's book of Complete Herbal, and it was written in 1653. And in this book, he outlines 300 herbs and their usages, and he also tells the astrology and the ruling sign and planet of the herbs and how one would use them for their virtues. For example, like how it grows, its ruling planet, its signs, its attributes, and how you would apply that medically. And in chapter 15, he discusses how you would apply the herbs and parts of the body based on disease, and really tying in the importance of astrology and herbalism. And he cites himself in here where he says basically, you know, if you're a physician, you're also an astrologer, because of how important that relationship then was. And we actually see that in the Doctrine of Signature, which we can talk about in a minute, about that overlay of the signature and how you know what it's used for and why. But that's like one of the classics that go back. 1600s, you have The Signature of All Things by Jacob Boehm. In this text, he identifies the law of signatures as universal, just like a magic law. And I wrote down one of his quotes, which really sums it well, that the whole outward visible world will All its being is a signature or a figure of the inward spiritual world. Whatever is internally, however it is operation is, so likewise it has a character externally, like as the spirit of each creature, sets forth and manifests the internal form of its birth by its body. So does the eternal being also. So that quote, again, that's from The Signature of All Things. He really ties in that concept of this, the signature, not just as a medical, but also as a magical, and how we could look inwardly and determine how we would use these herbs and items for healing or even in magic. So some like easy examples, and you know, me and you were talking about this when we were planning the show. You know, people always ask, well, what are some examples of this? Well, some easy ones, cut it in half, and what does it look like? It looks like an eye. So carrots are good for your eyes. So when you have, if you have bad vision, it's high in beta carotene. So you would, we would say eat more carrots, right? If you take a walnut and you crack it open, what does it look like? The brain. Well, what have we learned from eating the walnuts is that it's high in omega-3s. It's good for the brain function. Another common one, and I was talking about growing these myself. I love them so much. Tomatoes. You cut a tomato open. What does it look like? Got four chambers. It looks like the internal of a heart. Happens to be tomatoes are great for your heart. Another one that you hear cited a lot is celery. What does celery look like? Looks like the bone structure. What is celery used for? Well, it's high in silicon. So it is, or silicon. It's actually good for the connective tissues and parts of your body, which makes the skeletal system actually work. So those are just a few of the examples. There's hundreds more. Like a sweet potato looks like the pancreas. What does it help do? Well, they help regulate sugar. And kidney beans happen to be really good for the kidney. So in that example, we see how the name, literally the name, tells us how
right.
the plant herb is actually used.
And I think the name of that particular bean derived from its shape. So
exactly. Grapes are another one. What do they look like? They look like lungs. Well, eating lots of grapes, believe it or not, is actually good for your lung health. So that's the idea of the doctrine of signature from the medical aspect is, well, you can look at these things and you can determine based on the physical, whether it be how it grows in the ground. Is it a wet? Is it a hot temperament? Is it dry? Is it shaded? The color of it, the shape of it, and determining how it would be used for healing of an ailment. It also goes back, and if you even want an example from the Bible, we have, because this was came up in a forum post recently, someone wanted to know why we use hyssop in cleansing. Well, hyssop in Psalm 51 says, wash me with hyssop and I will be white as snow. And Ms. Katzen brought up that in the Passover, the Jews in Egypt took hyssop and dipped it in the lamb's blood to put it over their door so the angel of death would pass over them. So it has a history of purifying. So you see, like, I'm just trying to give you some examples from other cultural contexts and other literacies. Another example
right.
is the Bible's balm of Gilead, known for reconciling. And in Jeremiah, he says, is there no balm of Gilead to heal your wounds? So in hoodoo, what do we use when we're trying to reconcile a client who wants to get back with their boo? We use balm of Gilead buds because they helped with reconciling.
So this is an excellent list so far. I also wanted to mention, too, because, I mean, it gets into the – it's not just the shapes also. It's the colors of these items also come into play when it comes to the doctrine of signatures. You know, the kidney bean, if you look at it, it actually looks like a kidney. I mean, it's not just the shape. It's color in – Mm-hmm. Something I wanted to add in there. I didn't mean this. I don't want to derail you. Keep on going.
No, you're good. No, jump in whenever. I was going to bring up another one that I often cite when I talk about the doctrine of signature is Eyebright. It has been used for centuries for eye infection. So, and why? Because it looks like eyes. It also has a magical signature, so the name Eyebright. You can use Eyebright when you're doing spells on, say, you want to open someone's eyes up to make them see the truth. Well, you could dust a skull candle with Eyebright to help them see. So that's where you start to see the signature moved into that magical aspect of the plant's properties.
You know, I do want to say one thing real quick, too, is really when it comes to the medical side of the doctrine of signatures and herbalism and herbology, I do want to throw out that disclaimer that don't just jump in and start going, oh, I'm going to eat a ton of carrots, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to shell me a million walnuts and eat these. Definitely take into consideration your individual situations too. You know, different medical situations.
I always like to say that what's the difference between medicine and a poison? Anybody know?
Too much.
The dosage. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a very good metaphor. Been a long day, folks. My brain went, eh?
Analogy.
There we go. but it's true. It is possible to overdo things with herbs just as much as it is with man-made medicines and compounds and such. So as you listen to the show, keep in mind that from a medical standpoint, we're definitely not prescribing anything.
No, by all means, before you do any changes in your life, you should see your doctor and discuss these things, because your doctor knows what's going on with you better than an herb book that you picked up at the store off Amazon, right? Like, we're going over the history behind the doctrine of signature and giving you examples of it and how it is perceived and the metaphysical and the magical aspect of it. But yeah, definitely don't go eating a ton of carrots just because of that. You might start looking orange. Not a good sign. I agree with you.
it's not an attractive color for skin. And I'm just going to leave that there.
You know, in the book I was talking about, Culpepper's book, in chapter 15, another thing which we see in Hoodoo is he talks about looking at the body and using a sympathetic remedy for the illness. And he associates that with the astrology of the herb. And that really struck me when I read that, because it reminds me of Miss Katz's new book, Astrology for Root Workers. And in that book, on page, where I wrote it down, page 19, she has the astrological, I think it's page 19, Astrology Man. And this is something that you would see, it's page 33. So it's this man, and it has all of the different astrology signs that are governed or rule over those body parts. And when you get into looking at the herbs, you'll also notice that they are associated with elements, and they're associated with planets, and they're associated with signs.
Mm-hmm.
And so when these doctors like Culpepper, they would look at the kidney, what sign that is under, and make remedies like that. And Miss Katz's book, she also talks about remedy for fixing problems. That's what's on page 19. And that's the same idea of using sympathetic magic. So if you have an ailment, you might use the opposite or the same of that. And me and her were talking like a couple weeks ago. We were sorting the website. And I have a friend who's a Taurus who has thyroid issues. And I asked Ms. Katz, well, based on your knowledge, what would you say? And she's like, well, thyroids are ruled by Taurus. So, of course, I'm not surprised by that. And then she was telling me how you would remediate it by certain things, like wearing certain things or adding certain things. And that's kind of like the doctrine of signature, is where you're looking at it and you're determining what it's used for and then applying it. And yeah. Just to give great shout-outs, Kat, go on.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to throw out there that there's another book that we don't talk about much, but it's Lucky Mojo's The Amazing Book of Hoodoo Urban Root Medicine. It's an old classic Miss Kat republished, and it is filled with herbs and tells you where you can find it in Hoodoo Urban Root Magic as well. So that's another great book I wanted to throw out there in case you're looking for a new book on herbs for your library.
Oh, that I know Miss Kat is currently busy frantically getting ready for her events of next weekend in the Model Train Festival. Otherwise she'd be with us here tonight. But her Hoodoo Herb and Root Magic is an absolute must-have in every library. Reverend James and I actually have 3 copies of it. We have one that we take with us when we go out wild harvesting. We have a copy of it that we use in the house, and we have a hardcover copy of it as well. Absolute fantastic book.
I do want to mention that there is something, I don't know if JD's going to planning on bringing it up or not, but something that I thought about while you guys were talking. There's also 2 other things that kind of play in with the doctrine of signatures. One would be like taste. So in the aspect of like ginger, the heat. So that's why we add it to things like fiery wall of protection work. And also like the medical action that it has on, or the action that it has on your body whenever you take it. So like Hijon the Conqueror root is used a lot in cleansings and purging things because it is a diuretic.
Mm-hmm. And ginger too is used in heating up, and it also looks like the stomach, you know? So another way of looking at the signature of it and how it's applied to remedies, where, you know, you can buy ginger candies, you can buy really ginger anywhere or even just buy whole ginger and use that to help with stomach ailments. So, yeah, you're right.
And I don't know about y'all, but, you know, ginger root in and of itself always just looked like intestines to me. And I don't know. That's just me. We actually have a question from Dr. Sweets in the chat. So the knees in Capricorn are paired. So how would you remediate problems with knees? I think this is interesting between our herbal expert of the night and our aromatherapist, Reverend James. What would you say?
I'll let you go first, James.
Well, I mean, I don't to tell a lot of people to work with essential oils directly, really, just because of some of them can be quite dangerous.
Caustic.
Yeah, and I'm not very up to date on exactly, you know, I'm not a Western astrologer, I'm an Eastern astrologer. So when it comes to, you know, off the cuff of my brain, you know, what corresponds with Capricorn, I'm not going to be able to tell you that without looking it up. So I don't think I'm going to be much help here.
Well, so herbal, so if you were thinking like the doctrine of signatures, we talked about celery earlier and how it's good for the bone structure, and obviously the knees make up
connective
part of that
tissue, yes.
So that in itself is one area that I'd say, well, you might want to look into that. If you were looking at it from the astrological aspect, you could look at herbs that are used that are related to Capricorn and adding those into like a spiritual bath. For example, I looked it up while James was talking, but like jasmine, honeysuckle, rue, vervain are all ruled by Capricorn. So you could make a bath or even like a knee wash for that. You could even probably make a pouch that you would tie around the knee area.
I see. Case in point, essential oil of rue, for instance, I would not recommend anybody to use that without proper education in essential oils. It is neurotoxic. Don't use it, a lot of it. It is easily available, but that doesn't mean you should buy it.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah, and you're right. And you really need to know what you're doing with essential oils because, you know, a lot of people jumped on that bandwagon years ago and, you know, mixing things together. And, you know, you got to be careful because a lot of essential oils can be bad for pets too. I have dogs, so I purposely don't use a lot of essential, you know, you have those diffusers. Well, that could be toxic to your dogs or even to you breathing some of that in. So really do your research.
Exactly. Like citrus oils, especially for cats. Usually with a diffuser, you're okay. It's not putting out that much, but depending on what kind of diffuser, there's multiple kinds of diffusers. If you're doing a straight oil infuse or diffuser, definitely don't want your cat in a small place around that. You might come back to that room and it not be breathing.
Yeah.
So be aware of your essential oils and your animals. Absolutely.
And another thing to consider is what other gemstones and minerals are related to Capricorn. And you could always, so let's, you know, amethyst is one stone that is known as a Capricorn stone. So if you have the inflicted areas around that area, you could tie a stone around there or you know, like a leg bracelet or, and it's kind of hard on your knees to figure out where to put that. But if there's a way you could, you know, that'd be a way of mediating it through the sign.
You know, there's also another aspect of it as well. You know, when you have these herbs and roots and such with these ascriptions to the planets, the signs, so on and so forth, you know, finding those ones that can be brought together and brewed into a tea that you could actually ingest. Because if I remember it, I think if memory serves, I believe like rosemary is a Capricorn herb, chamomile, you know, so taking into account that cooking aspect of it too, it always comes back to cooking with me, doesn't it? Hoodoo food, cooking, reverend art. I'm going to be the paperclip guy and the hoodoo food guy. But you know, including the herbal aspect with intentional cooking can really help to remediate these sorts of ailments, these sorts of situations. And no, it's not an immediate overnight sort of a repair. It's something that would need time to evolve and grow with you. So I hope that that answers your question to some extent, Dr. Sweets.
I put it in the chat too, and I this is why I personally would not use essential oils, but I would use condition oils like Lucky Mojo carries, where you know you have a healing oil that was time and true, and it's been, you know, you can mix that with Capricorn oil and like strength oil, and then you'd have an oil blend. Lucky Mojo sells the church oil blends, and then you would have that, and you can cut that with a carrier oil, and then you can use that to dress your knees with it. You can also burn it on white figural candles to bring healing to that part of the body. So you can use it doll baby, which is kind of where we're headed with this now, getting down to more of the magical aspect.
Well, take us there, JD.
Well, we did. We talked a lot about medical. We talked about like the astrology, which is, I was really surprised to read that in that book, but it, you know, it does play a big role in, you know, when you start looking at the correspondence of herbs and roots and stuff, you'll start to notice the importance that that plays. And I think Reverend James could probably tell from the traditional Chinese aspect how Chinese astrology plays into the herbs and the roots that they would prescribe, right?
I think Reverend James might have muted himself and hasn't unmuted himself.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was talking about the astrological aspect of herbs and roots and how it plays a major role, and we're going to get into the magical side, and I believe even in the traditional Chinese medicine, Chinese astrology plays a role in the herbs and the roots, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because that's where you're getting into, you know, the Chinese five-element theory, and then all of the herbs have different elements and different body parts have different elements, and oh, yeah, absolutely.
That would be a whole other show.
Yeah, that would be a great show. So now looking at it from the magical aspect is, so we know that God has put his signature on everything, which tells us how to use it. If we observe, we will figure that out. Well, now let's look at like some examples of what things look like and how it's used in like that magical aspect. And so I just kind of jotted a few ones down, and by all means, please jump in if you have some you guys want to share too. But one is a mandrake root. Very popular. It makes it into pop culture. It's in Harry Potter books, right? Mandrake root looks like a human body. So in hoodoo, the doll is often used as a doll baby. So you would name and baptize it as the doll baby, and you can use mandrake root for a love spell on a love client. Sympathetic magic. Yep. So you'll notice is that in like this, we use sympathetic magic, contagious magic, where like is liked. Another famous one is if you find the lucky hand root, these tiny little orchid roots, and they look like they got fingers coming out of them in all different ways. Those roots are used in hoodoo for gambling and money spells because it looks like a hand, particularly good for people who throw dice or play cards because you use your hands in those types of gambling. Also a good root to have on hand if you are a person who works with your hands. So if you are a skilled laborer, it would be a good root to add to maybe a mojo that you're making for work because you work with your hands. Another one that I like to talk about, and I always have to explain, I always add, it's called deer's tongue, and then I always say herb because I don't want people going out in the wilderness and cutting deer's tongues out. Please don't do that. deer's tongue is
good
an
point.
Herb. It is not an animal. I mean, so please don't hurt any animals in this process. It is a leaf that looks like a deer's tongue. And so how it enters into hoodoo is that it is used often in love spells or in eloquent speech. So if I'm dating someone and I'm having a hard time getting them to talk or to express their feelings, you would add deer's tongue herb because it'll give that speech. If I'm going in front of a judge, maybe a court case, and I have to present, adding deer's tongue herb will give me eloquence in my speech. So it'll help me be a better speaker. So that's how it looks like a tongue. Tongues are known for speaking. So it's kind of how it adds to the tradition. Yes, thank you, James, for explaining it. It's a very popular herb. It is known as anyone who owns cats is like cat marijuana. Cats love it. In magic, it is used to attract men and to make them crave a woman. So thinking about catnip and its connection to the female, and you know. So these are just some examples of magical and magical aspects. Another one, so sometimes in the Doctrine of Signatures, we look at the name. So, for example, to break a couple up, if you don't have access to a cat or dog or you don't want to use that, you could then use dog's grass and catnip in the breakup spell to cause the couple to fight like cats and dogs. Because obviously cats and dogs don't like each other, right? That's the age-old saying. So here is an example where we're using, because of the names of the items, we're using that those names in the sympathetic aspect of the magic to cause the couple to break up and fight.
It's another form of ascription.
Yep. And another Deb Voigt was at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, and if you guys got the spell kit, she gave out these little waters of, she called them Rose of Jericho water. And if you don't know what a Rose of Jericho is, it's like little shrub that can stay dry and dead for years. And the minute it touches water, it comes to life. So it's literally called the resurrection plant. It's traditional to have out during Easter. You know, you let it dry out, and then on Easter Day, you give it water just as Jesus resurrected. But it's used in her spell. She was using that water to reconcile couples because you were resurrecting the love. So that was an example. And in Hoodoo, Rose of Jericho is often used by business owners to draw customers in. And then here's an aspect of where you bring in like the astrology and the timing of the moon phase and the use of the plant. So one of the traditions is during the waxing moon up until the full moon, you leave the rose in spring water. And then from the waning moon until the new moon, you take it out and you let it dry. And that's its resting period. And that water that it produced, you use that water to wipe down the doorway and the entrance to your business to draw customers in. So an old traditional way of working with a Rose of Jericho. And yeah, the water can definitely get stinky.
No, I've not had that happen, but typically when I've put a Rose of Jericho into water to awaken it, I tend to keep it someplace a little bit, not direct sun, but sunnier. And maybe that helps a little bit to kind of keep the growth, I guess.
Something I also do is just like set it in a bowl and put marbles or things like that in it to the rim and then fill that with water because it doesn't really need to be submerged in the water. It doesn't have to have a lot. You just have to get those roots into the water to where it can, you know, suck it up like a straw. And that way it kind of keeps it dry, keeps it from molding, keeps it from having to change it constantly. But yet you definitely don't want if you're trying to use it for business magic and things, you definitely don't want to have it sitting at the front of your business or something like that in a big old moldy bowl of water. That's not going to be good for business.
No, I suggest, like you said, taking it out and letting it dry up and then resubmerging it in fresh water. Because if the water does sit, it can get murky. And it doesn't, like you said, doesn't need a lot of water either. A lot of people like to fill the bowl up so it looks like it's like a submerged, like, reef. It doesn't need that much. A little goes a long way.
So I will say Reverend James' idea with the trick of using the marbles, though, even using those the little fish tank stones that you can get in plenty at different stores, even the Dollar Tree, it works phenomenally. And
or if you want to add extra magical stuff to it and you like crystals, you know, use tumbled chipped, you know, amethyst or something or what have you, as long as it's safe to put in water.
Yep, agree. And yeah, I see Dr. Sweet's playing. I've seen these in shops too, and people put coins in them. You do need to, with the water though, you got to make sure that if you're going to leave it there constantly as a plant like that, you need to change the water regularly. Just like any plant, if it sits in water too long, it'll get murky. I mean, so it's just the nature of planting. Sitting water tends to produce mold, so.
Very true. So back along the journey.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, what are some of your favorite herbs and why? You know, talking about our doctrine of signatures today. And for example, like roses is like the most well-known love flower in the world, right? It transcends almost all cultures about roses. So historically, what do we use roses for? Love work, right? Roses also have thorns. So if you want, you could also take thorns off if you're trying to punish an ex-lover. What's better than using rose thorns, right? Scorning a loved one and pierce the doll baby with those thorns. So looking at how what the plant is and its qualities and how we can use it in different ways, kind of really what the signature is about. And, you know, we observe that and then we use that in our magic to support what we're doing. Earlier you talked about making incense and how it's made up of our herbs and essential oils sometimes are added to incenses and woods and such. So that is because of their signature that they are important and why they're added there. So, you know, why myrrh might be used is because it's a holy plant in the Bible, and that's why it would be used in certain workings, but you wouldn't use that then in a cursing work because of the signature is different. Does that make sense?
Very much so. Very much so. You know, in for myself, again, a lot of my while I do use herbs in my different spell work and such, a lot of it for me goes into the cooking aspect of it. You know, blue herbs, when you look at like borage or periwinkle, these are things that can be added to a salad, and they can both be for communication and for peace to, you know, a peaceful home. You know, blue, the color ascribed to communication and peace. When you think about, you could use like violets. Violets are so pretty well known for love, and you could toss violets into a salad. These are some of the things, you know, I really like to use in my own practice. No one's ever going to want to come over here for dinner, I think. No, I'm just putting all this out there.
One herb signature that jumps out to me a lot and that I'm constantly reinforced of is catnip. So the way that it can draw a cat to it, that it can draw a person or customers or, you know, things to you. And I'm reminded of that every time I go and do candle work for a client because my cat comes running over to me because he knows that's where the catnip is.
I always know when Reverend James is using catnip because it sounds like just, I can't even explain just the cat howling. We have one cat that loves it. The other cat looks at him like he's nuts. I can't explain the difference between the two. But, you know, I mean, yeah. Things like, you know, I like to use calendula. That's one of my favorite money drawing herbs because the calendula flower itself looks like a gold coin. You know, I've also used dandelions in a pinch because a French dandelion looks like a gold coin. Those are, as most yeah. people know, you know, I'm very much big into, you know, the business magic and things. I also am very big fans of getting further into it, you know, talking about using things like lettuce and your more leafy sorts of herbs and vegetables in cooking and spell work, because it represents folding money. You know, if I'm mm-hmm. looking to build a mojo bag or something to draw money, I will toss in, you know, various different leafy green elements to represent that, along with my calendula and so on and so forth. And it really depends on the reading for the situation, but
one of the herbs are flowers that I like to use, and you made me think about it, is marigolds, and literally in the name, you know, you're Mary and you're with gold, right? Like, so it looks like gold coins. So it's another flower that's great for money work that I also like to use. Another, I was thinking too, when you were talking about the aspect of cooking and using herbs in our cooking, and you're talking about the money and the folding, and it reminded me of like the traditional New Year's meal. We all probably know about, you know, eating greens and black-eyed peas and having cornbread, but do they know why? Like the greens, like you were just saying, as you cook them, you're folding them older. It's folding in the money. They look like money. Black-eyed peas are known for good luck. And then cornbread is yellow like coins. It's like gold, like bringing that into your New Year. That's why it's the traditional New Year's meal. So kind of reminded me of that when you were talking about how you incorporate the cooking into your food. Actually, I had a client on earlier, and I was talking to her. She's working on a reconciling with her ex, and she loves to cook too. And I was suggesting to her taking catnip and grinding it up with some parsley and then sprinkling it on her pasta dishes. Like, we were just talking about how catnip will make the man go crazy for her. And you're hiding it with that parsley, but you're now using the plant at the same time to have a magical intent on the person that's eating it. And they would never know the wiser that they were eating catnip.
You know, there's a little discussion going on in the chat right now about why is lavender popular with attracting gay men? Or is it... Oh, my glasses almost fell off. Or is it Herman Harry Slater that made it popular? You know, I've kind of thought about these things myself in the ascription to lavender. Reverend James jumped in. Actually, why don't you jump in and share that with the listeners that might not be able to see the chat right now, Reverend James?
I was just saying that, you know, lavender, or the color purple, rather, has long been associated with homosexual things in general. I mean, more recent things such as like the lavender scare during the Cold War, or if you want to look at more ancient things, the Greek poet Sappho wrote many poems related to lesbians and used metaphors and simile to flowers such as violets, i.e. purple, i.e. lavender.
And, you know, one thing that I personally have really taken into consideration with the use of lavender, doing like gay love spells and so on and so forth, especially, you know, for gay men, is when the lavender plant is blooming, the part of it that you pick is the flower. The flower itself is very much reminiscent of a penis. You have the long stem, you have the flower at the top. So for me, that it almost is a direct doctrine of signatures sort of situation to use that herb for that purpose.
Yeah, it's a great example.
I hope we answered that a little bit there for you. I'm Dr. Sweets.
And it actually is, lavender is used in, and I just posted where you can find it in the Hoodoo Herb Root Magic. It is used for same-sex couples, but it's also used equally for opposite-sex clients as well. So, and nowadays with, you know, transgender and, you know, cisgender and such, that really those lines of plant is or a flower or something is used, it's kind of more open than ever. I mean, to say that lavender is just a gay male plant, you know, considering that nowadays you could be joining together, you know, a transgender couple, you know. So just throwing that out there as we think about, like, how we look at the herbs and how we use them, that they definitely have other uses as well.
And, you know, go ahead.
I'm trying to follow the chat at the same time. I was also thinking, because you brought up about the plant, I was thinking about a hijon root, to give another example of a male root. And why, what does a hijon root look like? It looks like a male testicle. So it has always been traditionally a power root for men. The opposite, you have Queen Elizabeth's root. When you look at it, what does it look like? And it looks like a woman's vagina. And it has always traditionally been used as a woman's power root. And both of those roots could be used together in love spells, if you're bringing a couple together. So talking about how you were talking about the anatomy and how it kind of gives you the shape or the visual and how it's used, it's like, yeah, that's another great example.
See, for me, a lot of the work that I do is, it pulls in a lot of ascription from color, shape, so on and so forth. I've been known to be untraditional in some cases, and I do want to let our listeners know too that sometimes if something speaks to you on a certain level, while it might not be traditional, if it works for you, use it. That is a gift that has been shared with you. And while I just be very careful about sharing it as a tradition, if it's something that is unique to your practice. But definitely, you know, definitely experiment. If something looks like...
Speaking of that, sorry, Reverend Art, but that just made me think of something. And that's the Adam and Eve root. And it makes me wonder if the person that didn't come up with the trinket Adam and Eve root might have ran that through the thought of the doctrine of signatures just by the way things look. So traditionally, an Adam and Eve root comes from, I want to say it's an orchid, I believe, but every few years it adds another bulb to its root. And that's how you can get an Adam and Eve root if there's two. And then there's also times where if it's an older root and it has three, it's been known to be called, you know, the mother, the father, and the child, or the Holy Family. So Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. But there is kind of like a little trinket that can be bought in a lot of places, and it's a balm of Gilead bud and a lotus root seed or lotus seed, and they're put together. That just made me think of that. Sorry.
Yeah, because Adam and Eve roots are very, they're almost distinct, I believe, right? They're an endangered.
Yes, they are an endangered species.
But you're right. I have seen exactly what you're talking about, too, where they've mixed a balm of Gilead bud with another plant and sold it as an Adam and Eve. And, you know, I was flipping through the book. I was thinking, like, we're talking about the meaning of names and how they're worked, and I'm thinking about asafoetida, you know, that Indian cooking herb.
Oh, yeah.
And it... And anyone who
the
knows
herb you
it,
never want to spill.
Oh my God! so it's called devil's dung, meaning like devil's shit, and it smells it, and it is the most repugnant thing I've ever smelled. But it's great for cursing. Like, think about the symbolism in there. Think about the use and the lookage, and you know. Just there's another like great example, and it's also I think people use it also for like healing, like with coughs and stuff, because I mean, it's so, like you said, you spill it, you'll know it. You'll smell like death for a month.
Yeah. I may have come across that one by personal experience once upon a time, and it does not come out of a wood surface easily. I will say that. But very true. I mean, it is a great assist for cursing work. And it devil's dung lives up to the name. Enough said. if you haven't experienced it, I can't even think of a way to describe that scent. What would you think? What would you say, JD?
It smells like death. It really does. It is the most repugnant. I mean, it's so great for cursing, but the smell, it's in like two containers and you can still smell it.
Uh-huh.
It's like garlic and onion, like times 10.
I could wash my hands 100 times and spray it down with Florida water, and you still can smell it. Just one of those. Vandal root's another one that is really good for cursing, and it smells like crap.
You know, Reverend James went the safe route, saying it's onions and garlic times 10. To me, it is feet and ass and rotten eggs and just whatever other items along those lines that you can think of. We have
okay,
a love
everybody. They make
it
sound terrible, but it makes food really good, I promise.
It does. That's the weird part. It's in so many recipes, and it's phenomenal from that aspect. Just if you're going to use it to curse in an incense, burn it outside. Just going to say.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's great to mix with a cursing incense. You can mix it with vandal root. That's a great mix with cursing incense to curse an enemy. And then there's some of the ones, the common items in our kitchens that, like, we didn't really talk about, but like cinnamon, you know. Cinnamon is a very common household item, and it is used in magic for luck in gambling and also in heating things up like love affairs. And earlier we talked about ginger, which is another one that can be, as Reverend James pointed out, the heat aspect of the plant. It's used in love spells to increase the heat in a relationship. So if you're trying to increase that passion, you might want to look at like ginger to add to your spell.
Cinnamon.
And cinnamon, yep.
Yeah, the Doctrine of Signatures isn't just about what you can see. It's use all of your senses, people.
You know, and exactly. That's another thing that I wanted to bring up, too, is, you know, there have been a few times in the past that I've used, like, the leaves of an aspen tree. There was someone who was very much, I had a client who wanted protection and love, and it happened to be around fall time, and the aspen leaves tend to turn a reddish color in our area, and they're also shaped like, they're kind of shaped like a shield and a heart. So, you know, Doctrine of Signatures, and I know in the, if I remember correctly, is it Norse beliefs that the aspen tree is called like the shield tree, utilized that in a very effective love protection spell, for her and her partner. And it's honestly still going strong today. So I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, JD, but I think when it comes to the Doctrine of Signatures, although it's not a situation of try to be as creative as you possibly can. It's definitely a situation for everyone to really take a look at the world around you and what you have available to you with a new set of eyes. You know,
agreed.
Think
I was gonna,
a little differently.
I really loved what James just said, is that the idea, Reverend James, looking at the whole plant and all the aspects of it, not just, you know, literally what you see with your eyes, but all of the elements that go into the herb and really guiding you on how it is worked. And, you know, and as you're pointing out, looking around you and how the doctrine of signature applies in your own environment. You know, we have some conversations about growing roots, and it reminds me of an old time spell where you take an item. So say you have a friend or a husband who, you know, is always running around town, so you take a pair of his dirty underwear, you tie it in a knot, and you bury it at the roots of a tree. And as the tree grows around it, it will hold him down and keep him at home. So looking at what do roots do, they hold things down, they ground things. So looking at the signature aspect of that and applying it to the sympathetic magic, that's where we get the spell from. So it kind of reminds me of what you're talking about here, is where we're looking around us at our environment and what is growing and why it's growing and how it grows and what that means to the work that we're doing.
And really that's kind of huge when it comes down to it, because when it comes with hoodoo and root work, traditionally practitioners would work with what they had available, and you don't need to constantly have, you know, all of these, you know, grade A organically grown and watered with Fiji water herbs. You know, there's very possibly something in your own backyard that will do the not only do the trick, but do the trick damn well.
Well, there's something that reminds me of that I can't remember if it's in the Bible or if it's just something that we say around here, but it's, you know, if there's a poison nearby or there's, you know, snakes nearby or some kind of thing like that, there's usually a remedy nearby. And I think that can kind of be expanded upon into a magical context. You know, if you have heartbreak or things like that, wherever that happens at, there most likely is probably something near you that you can use to remedy that. So there's always something nearby to, you know, fix things.
You know, that actually reminded me of a story, and I'm just going to share this real quick. It was a kind of a cliffside area that at when husbands, boyfriends and such would go off to sea, their wives and significant others would go to this cliff to watch the ships come back in. And you hear these folkloric tales as you go, but when tragedy would strike and a boat would not come back as expected, you know, the inevitable was happening, you know, from grief and angst and heartache, the one left behind was, you know, jumping off the cliff. And over time, the bleeding heart plant started to sprout randomly on this cliffside. And it served as a distraction during these times of heartache enough to remind them that there is still beauty despite the pain. And it really pulled, it protected the women that would go to this cliffside. And that's kind of what I always thought that was a really interesting story. That's it.
Yeah, I posted in the chat while we're talking about all these different like herbal use, and it just reminded me about powwow, which is comes from your side of town when you guys lived in Pennsylvania, like the long lost friend. And that's another traditional book in American history that talks a lot about this doctrine of signatures and the magical, the metaphysical aspects of working with plants. And as you know, as a nation, you know, starting out, a lot of it was farmland, and like you said, most of the people worked with what they had on hand. And still is very viable to that today. Go outside, go for a walk, see what's growing.
That's right, Phyllis. You're from the Pennsylvania area too, aren't you? The Long Lost Friend. If you haven't read it, you'll like that one. If you haven't read it, but we are coming up right up to the end of the music here. This has been a fantastic discussion, JD. Thank you so much for bringing this in. But that's really all the time we have for tonight. And I still feel like we've only touched the surface of this topic. But I hope everyone has enjoyed their time with us this evening. So until next time, keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, JD of HoodooHouseDetroit.com in Detroit, Michigan, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our special guest from Aroma G's Botanica and FolkMagicStudio.com will be Papa G from Nashville, Tennessee, with a discussion on social media for the modern witch. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at folkconjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics Thursdays and Fridays from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from folkconjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.